Chapter 84. We went out through the kitchen, single file, and we used the diner's rear door because that was the fastest route back to their Humvee. The sergeant led the way. I was sandwiched between the two specialists. One of them kept his hand flat on my back, pushing, and the other had hold of the front of my jacket, pulling. The night air felt sharp, neither warm nor cold. The acre of bare ground was jammed with parked cars. There were people 50 yards to my right, all of them men, all of them in uniform, all of them quiet and on best behavior, all of them clustered in a rough semicircle around the front of Brannan's bar, like a living halo behind the head of a saint, or an overspill crowd watching a prize fight. Most had bottles of beer in their hands, probably purchased elsewhere and carried back within sight of the main attraction. I guessed the senator was loving the attention, and I guessed his son was pretending not to. The Humvee looked wide and massive in among the regular rides, which it was. Parked next to it, at a respectful interval, was a plain sedan painted flat green. Reed Riley's borrowed staff car, I assumed, second into the lot and put next to the truck for the sake of the tough guy image. Instinctive for a politician. The sergeant slowed his step, and the rest of us bunched up behind him, and then we struck off again on a new vector, straight toward the truck, not fast, not slow. No one paid us any attention. We were just four dark figures, and everyone else was facing in the other direction. The Humvee was not locked. The sergeant opened the left rear door, and the specialists crowded behind me and left me no option but to get in. The interior smelled of canvas and sweat. The sergeant waited until the specialists were on board, one of them in the front passenger seat, the other across the wide transmission tunnel next to me in the back. Both of them turned watchfully toward me, and then he climbed into the driver's seat and hit the button and started the engine. It idled for a second, with a hammer-heavy diesel rattle, and he squirmed in his seat, and he got ready to move off. He turned the headlights on. He put the transmission in gear. He rolled forward, the ride lumpy, the steering vague, the speed low. He headed north across the rough ground, toward the Kellam Road, past the ranks of parked cars, past the back of the Sheriff's Department building. He checked his mirror out of sheer habit, and he glanced left, and he prepared to turn right 30 yards ahead. I asked, "What are you guys trained for?" He said, "Man portable shoulder launch surface to air defense." "Not police work?" "No." "I could tell," I said. "You didn't search me. You should have." I came out with my Beretta in my right hand. I reached forward and bunched his collar in my left hand tight enough to choke him. I hauled him back hard against his seat. I jammed the muzzle of the gun hard into the back of his right shoulder, directly above his armpit. Humvees are built pretty solid, including the seat frames. I had the guy pulled and pushed rigid against an immovable object. He wasn't going anywhere. He wasn't even going to breathe unless I let him. I said, "Let's all sit still and stay calm." They all did both things because of where I had the gun. His ear or his neck would not have worked. They would not have believed I was prepared to shoot the guy dead. Not one soldier against another, however desperate I was supposed to be. But a non-fatal wound through the soft flesh just to the right of his shoulder blade was plausible and terrible. It would have ended his career. It would have ended his life as he knew it, with nothing ahead of him but crippling pain and disability checks and left-handed household utensils. I let out half an inch of his collar but kept him tight against the seat back. I said, "Turn left." He turned left onto the east-west road. I said, "Drive on." He drove on into the die-straight tunnel through the trees, away from Kellam, toward Memphis. I said, "Faster." He sped up, and pretty soon the big truck was rattling and straining close to 60 miles an hour. And at that point we entered the realm of simple arithmetic. It was 9 o'clock in the evening, and that road was about 40 miles long, and the chances of meeting traffic on it were low. I figured a 30-minute, 30-mile drive would meet all our needs. "Keep on going," I said. The guy kept on going. 30 minutes later, we were at some featureless point, 30 miles west of Carter Crossing, and maybe 10 miles short of the minor road that led up toward Memphis. I said, "Okay, this is far enough. Let's stop here." I kept on hauling his collar one way, and I kept on pushing the other way with the gun, and the guy stepped off the gas and coasted and braked to a stop. He put the transmission in park and took his hands off the wheel and sat there like he knew what was coming next, which maybe he did, and maybe he didn't. I turned my head and looked at the guy next to me and said, "Take your boots off." And at that point, they all knew what was coming next, and there was a pause, like a mutiny brewing, but I waited it out until the guy next to me shrugged and bent to his task. I said, "Now your socks." The guy peeled them off and balled them up and stowed them in his boots, like a good soldier should. I said, "Now your jacket." He took his jacket off. I said, "Now your pants." There was another long, long pause, but then the guy hitched his butt up off the seat and slid his pants down over his hips. I looked at the guy in the front passenger seat and said, "Same 4 things for you." He got right to it, and then I made him help his sergeant out. I wasn't about to let the guy fold forward and away from me. Not at that point. When they were done, I turned back to the guy next to me and I said, "Now get out of the truck and walk forward 20 paces. His sergeant said, "You better hope we never meet again, Reacher." "No, I hope we do," I said. "Because after suitable reflection, I'm sure you'll want to thank me for not hurting you in any way at all, which I could have, you hopeless amateur." No reply. "Get out of the truck," I said again. And a minute later, all 3 of them were standing on the road in my headlight beams, barefoot, pantless, in nothing but T-shirts and boxers. They were 30 miles from where they wanted to be, which under the best of conditions was a 7 or 8 hour walk, and going barefoot on a rural road was no one's definition of the best of conditions. And even if by some miracle there was passing traffic, they stood no chance of hitching a ride. No chance at all. No one in his right mind would stop in the dark for 3 wildly gesticulating, bare-legged men. I climbed through to the driver's seat and reversed 100 yards, and then turned around and headed back the way we had come, with nothing but engine noise and the sour smell of boots and socks for company. The clock in my head showed 9:35, and I figured if the reduced payload let the Humvee hit 65 miles an hour, I would be in Carter Crossing again at 3 minutes past 10.